$199, Mr. Chairman.
We don't have committee files on it yet. Somebody say, hold on the phone.
Senator Ferguson.
Mr. Chairman, all we have is committee substitute for Senate Bill 199. What we did was we cut Senate Bill 233 and incorporated into Senate Bill 199. There is an error due to our staff person that was drafting this bill up. On page 2, section 5 should be deleted. Page 3, section 6 should be deleted.
Start over.
Page 2, section 5 should be deleted.
All right.
Page 3, section 6 should be deleted. And page 3 and 4, section 8 should be deleted. That would give us a zero fiscal note for 1980. I'd like Marshall Land if he's here. Is Marshall here?
That's okay, we understand.
Okay. To testify on the bill, and the fiscal note is based on a 6% increase for the instructional unit over 1980. My original bill came in with 10% over, and after the HASS meeting, the HESS committee came in with 7%, and talking with a number of members of the Finance Committee, they felt that possibly 6% increase would be sufficient. I have no problem with that. I believe that those in the education field have no problem with that. Marshall may want to address the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hackney.
Could I make just one comment before we leave page 6 of the bill? The amount that's in there is 7%. That
$34,135 on
line 25. What page?
On
66.
That's
7.
That figure there, Mr. Chairman, should be
33845.
Mr. Chairman? Is that
represent 6%?
That's 9.5.
Okay.
Senator Holman,
is this then the Finance Committee substitute?
Yeah.
I would move, Mr. Chairman, the committee substitute Senate Bill 199 Finance be passed through committee and pass recommendations.
You heard the motion. Is there an objection? Without objection. I'd like to bring up for discussion Senate Bill 25.
Thanks a lot, Marshall. Nice to see you.
You're welcome. Oh, you won that one.
Your camouflage wasn't needed.
Senate Bill 25.
No,
the other one that's just kind of ran. Senator Ray, would you explain the bill?
Substitute.
Where is it?
through you.
I have it.
Hold on just a second.
Steve, can you guys have a change?
Just this morning, huh?
We had it.
Yeah, okay.
If you just wait one minute,
Just hold it in advance, we'll go on to the next item. Senate Bill 222. We all have that in our files.
Did you bring that up?
Yeah, I'll bring that up. I'd like to move, to bring it up, and if you don't object, I'll remove it from your subcommittee so that you don't have to.
Would you?
Does everybody have 3 cents too?
Here's one.
Would you buy this or buy this? I'd like to explain this bill. There were a number of requests for school construction, you know, that we've been receiving. We received testimony last week from Whittier. We received testimony from the Lower Castlecrim area. And I had received a delegation down here from my area last week. So rather than go into the general fund, we requested and received the information from the Department of Education that there were existing funds available from previous appropriations that did not lapse. And so we tried to utilize all of those. However, the request for schools went a little beyond that, so we filled in with general funds, which is reflected on page 3.
Section 9 and 10.
Section 9 and 10. But all of the rest of it is already appropriated funds that are not going to be used for those specific purposes. And as you know, they go back to 1970 in some cases.
Mr. Chairman, in that regard, Section 10 was also provided for a bond bill, I think.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We are unable to float those bonds based on bond council opinion. So it's being replaced with this authorization.
If there's any questions, I'll answer any questions you might have. If not, Senator Holman?
I think we would like to see some amendment to the language in Section 10.
There is a question, Mr. Chairman, with legal counsel upstairs, and I think what they're asking for on the language in Section 10, line 6, would be that we strike the words forgiveness of indebtedness and replace that line with school district for past school construction debts, which is just a very slight change in language, which I think the final graphic will show.
Well, just delete the four words.
Yes.
Forgiveness of indebtedness for
that's correct.
Page 3, line 6, Section 10.
Legal affairs is asking us to change that and add the word debts at the end of that sentence.
Or debts
at the end of the sentence. School construction debts.
Do you make that motion, Senator Holmes?
I would move that we pass a committee substitute for Senate Bill 222 finance with that change. Yeah, with that changes. So what we'll leave here is just a committee substitute.
Without objection, then, how did you?
Well, with the change here,
yeah.
As we
how?
Informally amended.
Recommendation?
Do pass recommendation.
There's a do pass recommendation. Is there an objection? Without objection? And what is that number you want?
142 while Senator Ray's out of the room.
Okay. Without objection, then we'll bring up Senate Bill 22.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 22 basically extends the health coverage group insurance to permanent or temporary employees who have, as the bill is presently written, worked for the same governmental unit for 30 days or more. The fiscal note attached indicates that for a 30-day period of time, it involves $1,785,000, and I have some figures here requested by the committee when we took this bill up before. 30 days is $1,700,000+, $700,000+. 90 days would be $691,000. 120 days is $615,000. And 180 days is $322,000. And Mr. Chairman, I couldn't, on the basis of what I've been able to put together, recognize the limited funds that we've got. I just couldn't recommend to the committee anything greater than the 120 or 180 days. And I'm going to put a motion forward that we change on line, on line 14, page 1, 30 days to 100 days. 180 days, I'm sorry.
180 days.
Which would give a fiscal note of $322,000 attached to it. There's someone here, or was, or has been. You know, maybe they got tired and left.
No, I saw it. Would you just make sure when Gary comes back that they get the new fiscal note for this?
I was kidding, though, about when I said Senator Ray was out of the room. I maybe if he's in the reach or something, he ought to be able to.
It's possible.
Have you talked to him about that?
No, sir. I did not want to do it in any clearer within reach.
Do you want to leave them, or is that up to you?
I just didn't move the bill if the committee's in agreement to do that. I ask for unanimous consent for the amendment.
Okay, if you don't object, I'd like to make it to a committee substitute.
Committee substitute.
And do you recommend individual or do you pass away?
I recommend a do pass recommendation on it.
Any objection? Do pass? Without objection?
We got a weak will to appear today, anyway.
Is what kind of matter?
I don't know.
How much care?
I think it's a long story.
Talking about 180 days.
The
interest on a phase where basically you're employed for 6 months, you've been in employment.
Oh, I agree.
Of a government unit for 6 months, or for 180 days.
That was the way I understood it.
I wish you'd make it 120 days, because then that would fit into the temporary or not permanent.
Okay, ask the guys. I don't have any problem.
If it changes to not to 180, but 120 days, that would fit into the temporary employee, or the thing is, the recognition of temporary employee.
What's the difference on the occupancy during the... We get kind of physical, I don't get that, it's about 600,000.
Yeah.
It's hard to...
But since they solved the damn problem, I don't know what the need for the conflict is.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, if you put the 120 days, that's more realistic.
It's generally the only way it got to those to get out.
Right.
If you made it to 120 days, it would be better. That fits in with the public building. Maybe we can amend it on the floor. I'm not sure that 180 days, they won't say that's 180 working days. That makes sense.
Senator Sumner.
It was my understanding, as Bill reads, that if they've been permanent or temporary employment with the same government agencies for 30 days or more, that says to me that if they've been with the government agency, not 180 working days, but just if they've been employed by that agency 180 days. I'm sure they're not accumulating this on a per day working day basis.
See, that's the difference between permanent and temporary employees. Permanent employees are by month time, temporary is by day and week.
Month. They did different in the data that they provided to me, so that's. But I'll find it.
You want us to hold it?
No, I'll try. No, I'll try. Okay, I see where he's coming from.
Okay, Senator Ray, are you ready on 25?
Yes, sir.
Which version do you want us to look at?
Can I touch it? You got one there?
Okay, would you explain it to us?
The committee substitute, Mr. Chairman, provides that the amounts... both the state and the employee would otherwise have paid into the federal Social Security system at the rate then in effect, if the state would continue in the federal Social Security system, shall be paid into the special employee benefit account department of administration to be used to provide supplemental employee benefits provided in AS so-and-so. Now what this means is that the department of administration shall provide to the employee benefits of his option, either supplemental health, death, disability, survivor, or annuity. The employee makes a contribution, may select the types and the amounts. And then the second section, that's the first section. And that's provided to the Department Administration shall adopt the regulations that serve. And then the second section is if approved, the employees shall become effective January 1st, 1980, but the check or the balance in Section 3, which provides for an election. And it's only after it's been certified by the people who conduct the election and it's determined that the state shall withdraw, or if they have not, if they withdraw, then this will go into effect. No fiscal note, there's no change in money, or nothing.
Sir, Chairman?
That's Senator Sumner.
The State Affairs holding a meeting on the bill 25.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. What is this committee substitute? Is this a finance committee substitute?
This would be, yes, sir.
He'd never be a part of pulling that bill out of the committee.
I didn't pull it out, no. It's in the finance committee now.
I came up this morning.
I didn't pull it out.
Thank you, Chairman.
Senator Danko.
Bill, how did this work? We had this 2 years before, I think, the state of Harris, we were asking to have that election in. I guess they never did, but how does this affect him? Yeah, it's already got his four quarters in. Do you know if he's going to be getting social security benefits and will become under this process? Will there be a double program going on? Mm-hmm.
Not to my knowledge.
Someone said that it would. I've got our four quarters in anyway. So we're going to be helped with social security. We won't be able to get on full program. So that was a question that everybody could answer. The second question is over on your page two, where it says, and we're talking about that election.
Mm-hmm.
Do you favor withdrawal from the Social Security system if the ballots are contained in this script on the benefits provided in this act, which would be provided to a further benefit on the Social Security system? What would happen if we put in the cost of those services?
You can amend it any way you want. I don't care what you
I just wonder, you can ask me right now, it's that question up there, would I like to withdraw from Social Security? And if I don't know what in lieu of what, and what it's going to cost, that's a problem. Hold on. So if we knew what the cost of services, you settle on the first part that you could select what services, I think in Section B, that the employee can select what benefits and supplemental benefits purchased from special accounts. Somewhere there, I think on that ballot, we ought to say, I thought right after system, we put in the cost of service.
Okay, I'm not probably going to amend it anyway. Do you want to amend it? The ballot shall contain a description of the benefits and the costs thereof?
Yeah, something that will give a little more information.
Benefits and the costs thereof provided for in this.
What lines are, well,
we're on page two.
Yeah. Section three.
Section three.
Right.
About how far down?
About the middle of the paragraph.
Oh, it shall contain a description of it.
Do you favor withdrawal from the Social Security system? The ballot shall contain a description of the benefits and the cost thereof provided for in this act. Or you can make another. Gary, you want to would it be better just to put a different sentence in there?
Oh, this is fine, I think, sir.
All
right. Okay. Were there any other questions on it? Sorry, the committee.
I would move and ask you to consent to put out the committee substitute for Senate Bill number 25 for the individual recommendations.
Is there an objection? Without objection. Was Brad coming back? Oh, okay. We'll recess finance until. Yes.
Well, did you want to? Do you want to take up the excise and license fee? I mean, Senator Glitter's providing the time.
We'll recess.
Hey, wait a minute. Huh? That was a sign of bill.
Bring back Senator 146.
I thought they retreated. Well,
you
want to
sign the bill, Ed?
Yes, sir. Do any action on that?
We'll just keep that.
The expression is, you owe me another one.
That just makes me... What do you want to recess for 8:30? Recess until 8:30 tomorrow morning.
All right. I hear you. I hear and I shall obey you.
Gary, did you see this?
There's a motion to bring up Senate Bill 114 for discussion. Senator Bradley, did you want to testify? Senator Bradley, did you want to testify? We have 114 now for discussion.
Very well.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to pass this off.
Mr. Chairman, I'm a...
Senator Sumner?
I'm a never acting late or do pass out of this if the testimony doesn't go much over a minute.
Hey, you tell me when you have all due passes and I'll just cut it right off.
Right now, I think.
Okay, fine. Next one up, Mr. Chairman. first half of this bill provides that a state contract for or purchase of materials, equipment, or services must be based on competitive bids advertised to Alaska bidders or to non-Alaska bidders when no competition between Alaska bidders exists. An award of contract shall be made to the lowest qualified bidder after advertising for the bids. No competitive bid shall be required when no competition exists in a declared emergency, such as the Fairbanks flood, earthquake, or whatever the government considers an emergency or declares as one, where rates are fixed by law or ordinance, for items traded in or own are like items, typewriters or something of this sort, and so on. And the amount of the contract, if the amount of the contract is estimated to exceed $2,500, sealed bids will be solicited. When practical, a solicitation of bids should be made by publishing notices in newspapers, posting notices in public places, mailing notices to prospective Alaska bidders, and the Department of Administration may publish notices in trade journals. All bids shall be sealed when received, shall be opened in public at the hour stated in the notice. Now, all of this hasn't been done in the past. Senator Dankworth submitted a bill, I submitted a bill, our Representative Meekins in the House submitted a bill, his was shot down, Senator Dankworth was shot down, mine was shot down, and they want the one, the Bi-Alaska Committee, of which you have some correspondence on, wants the one that their attorney prepared. And with all the arguing that we've done, we haven't talked them out of anything. They're really, really fed up. We passed this out of the Commerce Committee unanimously. We had 19 people that testified and 20 that observed. And they said they could have 40 or 60. The people are really fed up. As you probably noticed, those from Anchorage, there have been at least 5 articles in the Great Lander on this. There have been 3 in the Anchorage Times, and I don't know about the Daily News. Everybody is upset about the state contracting with out-of-state firms. Now, another thing I found out recently from someone who worked in the purchasing division, Department of Administration, that even those contracts in the tourism division should have gone through the Department of Administration. If you read the law carefully, it was read to me and explained to me, I can't see it any other way. There have been quite a few in the Department of Health and Social Services that have gone out themselves on contracts. They should have gone through that particular agency and the department. They even had one of their own people, pretty high up in that division, that had a contract with the state approved by the director of that division. And nothing's ever been done. The people are really fed up. We had testimony from people from Anchorage and from Fairbanks that testified that they were the low bidder, and they still didn't get it. We had others that testified that we were never even notified, and we were on the list, and so on. So this is just a few of them. I'm talking as fast as I can, Mr. Chairman. I know you got a lot to do today.
Mr. Chairman,
I'm not going to recognize any committee
members.
Mr. Chairman, I for one have no questions. He's explained it fully. If you'd entertain a motion, I'd make one.
All right. Do you want amendments to come in?
The amendment I have, Mr. Chairman, I can make it move. It's a very minor amendment, but I'll make it.
I move and ask unanimous consent we pass out committee substitute for Senate Bill 114 with individual recommendation.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, Senator Bennett.
Is every... Let me see if I can
get this one back.
Let me see if I can
tell you this signing on the wrong calendar.
Faster. Is everyone familiar?
Bring it back and put it in my hat.
Is everyone familiar with the appropriation of the Portage Creek Portage to Whittier transportation system?
I didn't hear the question.
Is everyone familiar with the appropriation for the Portage to Whittier transportation system? You are.
Sorry
to make motion. There's a motion on Senate Bill 59 for individual recommendations. Is there an objection?
Mr. Chairman, have the commissioner hold it here.
Just if you want to.
Mr. Chairman, we passed out, I know a motion has been made, but if I may, we passed out the resolution.
He removes his objection. Thank you. That's okay.
This was prepared by the Department of Transportation, and they supported it, but Mr. Bowling is here to...
Okay, we'll include it in the master file. Thank you very much. What
Thank
we intend
you.
To do now on the loan bills is to, there are bills in both the House Rules and House Senate Rules Committee that we can work on as an attachment to those, which will provide us more time to go in depth into those three, which is 146, 147, and 152. Because in the time limitation, we don't have time. So when we get to those, we'll get back to you and on the testimony.
Are you fine, Mr. Chairman? Thank you very much, sir.
Okay.
Thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you, sir. Without objection, I bring up Senate Bill 130.
If I may, I'd like to address the fiscal note first. I know that's backwards, but just so we'll understand, there is a fiscal note that has been attached.
I'm reading.
I have one. We have the potential through these, through making some adjustments in our state loan program, to get it under a federal guaranteed loan program. And what it will do is indicated on the fiscal note. It'll provide, not next year, but the year after, about $400,000. We estimated $360,000. It may even be a little larger than that. $400,000, and then increasing from that year forward to the state of Alaska. It'll provide federal funds, and they will be used to supplant general funds. Now, I'll be glad to explain what this is. The bill does two things, and the first of which is to provide for an incentive for Alaskans to attend institutions in Alaska. What it does is provide a cancellation benefit if a student decides to attend an Alaskan institution as opposed to going outside. Currently, the loan program provides up to 40% of the loan to be canceled if, upon completing your study, the person lives and works in Alaska. What this bill does, in one part of it, I don't have the bill before me any longer, what it does in one part of it is it allows for each year in attendance in Alaskan institution for that to apply as if it were employment in the state. That portion of the bill is a compromise that has come about over years of trying to find some way to provide provide an incentive for people to attend Alaskan institutions. The attempts have ranged anywhere from making an outright grant to restricting a loan program so you couldn't use it out of state, a number of other things. The second thing that the loan does, or these changes do in 130, is to make the loan program eligible for guaranteed under this guaranteed student loan program, which is under Title IV of the Higher Education Act, the federal program. I've given you a one-page little summary of what the guaranteed student loan program is. Very briefly, what it does is the federal government says to a nonprofit institution like the state, if you will make loans to students, we'll guarantee you get your money back. That's essentially what it does. If the people do not pay the loan back, if they default, if they die, if they file bankruptcy, if they become disabled, the federal government will pay the state of Alaska the amount that we have loaned that student to go to school. So no longer will we be, in essence, eating the defaults ourselves. The federal government will do it instead. The other thing that it will do, and the thing that provides a great deal of funds for the state of Alaska, the federal program provides for payment of interest while that student is in school. In other words, they will say, if you will give a student a loan, we don't feel the person should have to pay while they're in school. So if you will waive payment, we will pay the interest on behalf of the student. Now that's exactly what we do now, except we say the loans are not interest-bearing while they're in school. This bill changes it and says the loans are interest-bearing, but the student is eligible for interest benefits. So while those students are in school, we'll be getting the 5% from the federal government. And in the past, we got nothing because we waived it for the student. It doesn't put any hardship on the student whatsoever. It simply provides additional funds for the state of Alaska.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hackett,
there's one question that I had neglected to ask before about this loan, and I wanted a matter of record. Is there any limitation at all as to what college or university a student can attend? Are there any federal restrictions that are tied into the use of these funds in any way at all in getting into this federal program?
All right, the only restriction is that the student must attend an accredited, approved institution. Now what that means is the federal government puts out a list of institutions that are accredited and are approved internationally, not only nationally but internationally. And the student must attend one of those institutions. If they attend another institution, for instance, a voc-ed program in the state of Alaska that is approved by the commission for their attendance, it would be a regular loan as it would now, and it simply wouldn't be insured by the feds, it would be insured by the state of Alaska as it is currently. So it won't restrict it in any way. The other thing that's important and probably should be mentioned is this program allows the lending agency to decide who gets funded, where they're going to go, and everything else. There are no restrictions on us whatsoever, other than the fact they have to go to an eligible institution. The other thing that we have done through the language of this bill is we've provided for the fact that if at some time restrictions are placed on this program that we do not like, we can pull out, and we don't have to come back to the legislature to change the language or anything else. The program will continue as it always has in the past. It simply means we wouldn't be getting interest benefits.
Senator Ray.
My understanding is the Section 2 amendment is that if you spend 2 years in school here, then that cancels the employment requirement in the state?
That's correct. That is in lieu of the employment.
You don't have to, by going to school, it means you're employed in the state.
That's
for the 2 years.
That's what they intended to do.
And then the residency, what does that mean? Qualified as a year of residency. That means if you go for, 4 years, you get 30% grant, deferment?
That means if you go for yes, that's exactly right. In other words, right now the language says employed and reside in the state. And after the second year you get 10% and another 10% and so on. And this says that attendance at Alaskan institution is equivalent to employment in the state. That portion of the bill was...
And residency.
And yes, well, employment and residency. Have to have the vote to get cancellation benefits.
And if you keep, I'm not too familiar with it, but if you came, say that you were a resident outside the state and came to Alaska, is there any requirement that you, like if you came up here for a summer job and put in for an application, there's a requirement you have to go to school here first, or you have to go to school.
You'd have to be a 2-year resident of Alaska before you can even apply. under a federal program, federally subsidized program, it would remain the same. We still, we have already sent our existing law past the federal office, and they've approved that those portions. They feel that the two-year restriction is more restrictive than they would like to see, but they're not going to argue.
What I'm getting at is, if you came up here, suppose you came up here as a resident, a non-resident, and went to school here 2 years, paid your own rate.
That would not.
That doesn't count.
No, because you couldn't get a loan as a non-resident. Now, if you came out up here as a non-resident, went to school 2 years, declared this as your state, your domicile, and became a resident, then we could give a loan for the third year, and that third year would apply. The first 2 years would not count. Those attendance regulations would apply once you have received the loan and are using it to attend the last institution. And as a non-resident, you can't get a loan from it.
What would happen if you were changed the, on line 28, if you would change the word and to or, what would happen?
Line 28 on the first page and the second page.
All right.
That would work.
I got it.
There's no and.
There's no and. All right. I was looking out the other bill. I didn't get it. I don't know what John's talking about.
Senator Bennett?
Thank you. Looking at this in the light with the recent local hiring law, what would happen the first time we had an injunction filed against us? Is it a relatively big chance that by virtue of federal involvement, we mitigated right down to a 30-day residence?
We've been advised, Senator Bennett, that from our attorney, that if anyone ever challenged the two-year regulation, as it exists now, the two-year restriction, that it would probably be thrown out. It has never been challenged. And I don't know that the federal involvement would change that in any way. They felt that it may be too restrictive as it exists, the fact that it has existed since 71 and no one's challenged it. I guess it's maybe our benefit.
Yeah, I'll tell you what my big concern is on this, and maybe I don't see it right there, but it appears to me that every time there's something that the federal government has given up a right or freedom, forced into a non-fully compliance type situation. To your knowledge, in this alone, in this, what could it lead to?
I really agree with your reluctance on this, because that's exactly what I've seen too. I don't see any in this program, and the fact that we can opt out at any time we want, I think, is a good feature. The fact that they do not restrict it anywhere, who we give the awards to, or where they go, is a very effective feature. They say, of course, that we have to sign and we would not discriminate on the basis of race or common criteria.
There's something about that, employment and residency. I don't know. Can you explain a little bit of that?
Maybe why it's necessary.
Yeah, why is it employment and residency?
I suspect it's not, other than the fact that we say that a person must be employed and reside in the state. Now, if we just said employed, well, actually, a year of employment as defined in the law may be sufficient. I don't know. I honestly have no idea why you have to have and in there. I know we wouldn't want to put or in there, as you suggested, Nick, because of the fact that we have required that they must be employed, not simply reside in the state, but they must work here to get the cancellation benefit. If you want to get rid of and residency, that may not change the law. I'm not sure.
But I don't see how you can possibly say that you're working or you're employed here because when you're attending the university, that's the part that I don't
know. Oh, may I explain?
what they're trying to do here is, the current law says you can get cancellation benefits if you are employed and reside in the state. They're saying
that means after your schooling is over.
That's after your schooling is over.
You spend 2 years and you get a portion of it.
That's correct.
But this says that now it's no longer being affected. You would count your employment as the time you went to school. In other words, when you got done, you could call.
That's exactly right. And what the reason they worded it this way is they did not want cancellation to be on top of the 40% you get if you work. In other words, they didn't want it to be 40% for going to school and then get another 40% for working here and end up canceling 80% of the loan. They want it to be 40% only. And so I understand that's the language that was used in that portion of the bill.
That's what concerns me is by putting the two together, I think it's doubling it.
I hope not. That's not the way we interpret it.
Oh, yeah.
Senator Bennett?
Underhanded thing. Is there any way this could be construed as a bond? Resident student who comes out to Tennessee University for 2 years, been here, in fact, then or after he qualified as a resident, tells you the program.
If they attended the university and established their residency here, yes. Now, their years of attendance retroactive before their loan wouldn't apply.
What would happen, Mr. Chairman, if we just delete and residency?
I think it would serve the same purpose. And if it didn't, we would make sure that it did either through definition and regulation. It would serve the same purpose.
I get the feeling that you're making somebody a resident, but it might not be.
Oh, I see. But that concern is by all means.
That's my only
hurry to the strike.
That's thank you.
I would anticipate the default rate would greatly increase this program. If I were a student and I knew what this law said, I think I'd just tell you that I could make the payments. You're guaranteed the federal government to pick up the tab. There's no collateral involved. I just wanted to anticipate that the default rate would really go up, but I sure wouldn't say that if I was considering not what I was going to do. If I knew it was insured and the federal government would pick it up, if I fail, they'll pay it off. There's no collateral or anything. I'm not against that. That's good. I'll tell what's going on. I don't care about how that is.
Yes.
No, I think it does. Probably, I don't know if that's irresponsible or it doesn't do it.
We don't know whether it would go up.
Why should some kids pay it in the bank? If the kids don't want to pay it, the federal government will allow them to pay for it and say, okay, you're just pay it. But if a guy wants to meet his obligations,
that's correct, except for there is one more thing to be said, and that is we're going to be hounding them in any case, and if they do not pay it, we'll turn it over after 120 days, we'll turn it over to the federal government, they pay us, and they say, here's your money. If we continue to pursue collection, which we would continue to do anyway through the Attorney General's office, and if the state of Alaska collects the money, the federal government says you get to keep 30% of what you collect. So not only would we get paid for the loan, but we get paid for what we collect also. So we
I understand that, and I think it should be clear, at least policy-wise, that you don't turn a guy loose just because you collect the federal
money. Okay. Most certainly.
One thing I'm saying for this is to have the kids get the money and then stay in the state and work for a couple of years. Now that whole thing is going on.
Yes, the bill does two things. It enables us to get under that federal program. The other thing it does is what Senator Ray referring to. And yes, it does change the cancellation. It's not only the incentive to work, but also the incentive for them to attend an institution. Senator Ray, one other thing that should be mentioned probably is that if this passed, the person that does attend the lesson institution will no longer have any incentive to stay in the work in terms of financial incentive, because they would already have their 40% canceled, and they could take off.
What would happen if we just delete N? Page 4, line 4, just delete that question. Leave it the way it is.
Right, that's would be my suggestion, and if they present a strong enough case, then it later in the house.
That wouldn't hurt your program. It wouldn't change it at all.
I don't know why they did. Just because it wasn't
motion. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman? I would move to agree with the delete section M.
What page?
4.
Page 4. Too much upset on residency and employment record.
Page 4, line 4.
Senator,
I'd move that we hold the bill with that amendment until our next meeting. I'd like to research some points here and staff do that.
There's a motion to the amendment.
Is that because the possible fear of making, of curbing the students' opportunity to go to the education outside?
I think there's a big move to subsidize universities at the expense of what the original legislative intent was behind the student loan grant program, and that is give him freedom to go wherever he wanted to go, wherever he or she was attracted to go, because of the quality education law.
You've heard the motion. Is there an objection? Without objection, I'll hold.
Are you objecting?
May I make one comment?
Certainly, sir.
If the portions that I'm really interested in, those portions that would allow us to get into the federal program are not acted on this year, the $360,000 that I say were saved and saved the last year will not be saved in 81, it will be in 82. So we can't get under the programs, and we'll just move those money forward.
If it's
been
along this time, we'll call.
I don't mind involving the federal program. I think that it is going to cost me something. I can't accept it. They're going to allow, because the people are going to allow this 2-year residency to stand.
That's something that should have been.
Without objection, Senate Bill 228. Senator Plata.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, presentation is very short on 228. The Finance Committee substitute draft accomplished what was discussed in an earlier meeting.
Does everybody have something called draft on it?
Chairman, the draft copy addresses itself only to excise tax with the desire of the committee to delete the license fees, which are being addressed in the Title IV revision, and that, in my opinion, were superior to what was in the bill. But of course, the APA intentionally the public input goes into the revision of Title IV, and those will be coming to the legislature in the very near future. The excise portion, as before you now, and we attach this to note, does generate sufficient funds to implement the new direction in alcohol and food treatment. The fiscal note shows that the excise increase is $2,586,766. The areas of increase were discussed with industry and others to accomplish the most harmonious situation between the consuming public and, of course, the vendors and such, with the end result being to accomplish an increase of sufficient funds to address alcoholism within the state. I suggest that you consider it favorably. Thank you.
Any questions for Senator Platt?
I don't have any questions, Mr. Chairman. With due respect to my colleague, I think to be more fair, you should put the, you should increase the tax from 25 to 30 cents a gallon on beer and reduce it to the hard liquor. Just double, you get 4,600,000 beer.
You drink beer?
That's all I get.
Mr. Chairman, if I might respond to that, the rationale for the higher increase in the hard spirits was because most generally those are served by the drink. And of course, the overall increase then is minimized where beer is a high volume item that the recovery per drink adds substantial increase per drink, i.e. a bottle of beer is 12 ounces, and that's a substantial increase then where a bottle of hard liquor is usually dispensed in a shot at a time, which there are 26 and 50, 32 and 4.
Mr. Chairman, what I'm trying to say is
that
realistically, if you're going to put a tax on it, you're talking about 2.5 cents a gallon, that would be 5-7 cents a case approximately for beer. Well, we know what's going to happen with the wholesaler. Why don't we just put 15 cents a case on the beer, and because we already the sawyer anyway, so the state would be getting the money as soon as the wholesaler.
The approximate increase, if you compute it by the drink, in the way it's presented before you, is roughly about the same as a 2.5 cent increase on the beer. The equivalency of the transfer of that to the bottle of beer is relatively the same as it would be the transfer of the hard spirit increase per drink, about 2 cents.
Mr. Chairman? I would move that we increase the small beverages to 30 cents a gallon. Leave the rest of it.
There's a motion to increase, small from 27.5 to 30. Is there an objection? There's an objection. All in favor of the motion, signify by raising your right hand. Motion to fail.
Okay.
Any further discussion? Motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that the minister move this out with individual recommendations.
I'm the only one that don't want to raise the liquor tax.
Well,
I tried my best.
Taking due note of it. This exactly what you told me to do when you made that motion.
Mike, did you get that? Bill, would you repeat that again, please?
We heard.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Mike Hartman.
That's like a lot of quick conversation. Anytime anybody asks me now, I try to give them forward. $2 million more.
What do you mean?
$2.5 cents means $2.3 million more.
Why not?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we can still rescind their action.
I recommend that, so we can.
Senator Coletta? Senator Coletta? Senator Coletta, if you have a minute for the press.
I'm sorry.
We have Senate Bill 182. This is an act abolishing the Alaska Salary Commission, and Senator Coletta, you have the floor.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the bill is quite simple in what it accomplishes. It abolishes the Salary Commission. The reasons for that is that it's my own opinion the Salary Commission is not performing in the manner that it was intended to act. And this places all salaries at their current levels and allows us the option to address increases by individual categories rather than a collective message across the board raises. There have been no changes in anyone's pay structure in the measure. The only exception to that rule is that all state personnel, including the legislature, receive the same per diem.
There were two problem areas that were not addressed in this bill, in this committee substitute. Yeah. That was the question of director salaries and deputy commissioner salaries.
Yes.
Mrs. Devils, who was the chairman of the Salary Commission, came on yesterday, but we just couldn't get the time to meet with her. And so she brought these comments to us, and we have here Pat Hunt, who can possibly help us if we desire to amend this bill to address those two areas, which would be directors and deputy commissioners. As I understand, under the existing bill, they would remain whatever they're getting now.
That's correct.
Was that intentional, that they remain where they are?
It was not intentional by design. It only ended up so because, of course, to repeal the Salary Commission, we went back to what was in existence at the time they were created. And it was not my desire to add or tamper other than that set of circumstances. The way it was before we created them. And then each of the affected areas would be addressed independently and at the discretion of the legislature.
Pat Hunt is here. I'd like to ask him to come to the table. Who is here?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to come here.
Senator Clark.
There was some confusion existing around this bill, some of it in the press. Is it true that this bill does not in any way raise legislative salaries?
It most certainly does not. Every salary is as what it was on their last pay period. 2 weeks ago, the only pay period was. Senator Sumner, I think where the confusion may have come in drafting, I made the request that I've stated to you, I wanted us to go back to where we were before we created the Salary Commission. We created the Salary Commission prior to the people repealing an act that we had passed in the legislature. So, of course, the researcher went to what the people had repealed because, of course, that was what was on the books before we created the Salary Commission, except the people had repealed that. So in the course of that, a bill was printed that was incorrect. It did raise, because it did exactly what the people had suggested to know. It was an automatic step raise. And the sponsor substitute then, of course, corrected that, and the State Affairs Committee substitute made the other change, which is standardization of per diem for all state employees.
Pat, Pat, could you address the two areas that are left out of this?
There are two exclusions by class, one being the deputy commissioners whose salaries are not set here and who, in my judgment, will simply remain at their old salary then under the salary commission. The directors are in the same boat. They're not addressed here either. Apparently, their salary setting unit would still be the salary commission. But as I look at the entitlement of the act, I note that the salary commission is being abolished. So it sort of leaves those two categories of people sitting out without a salary setting authority in the seat. Now, perhaps an attorney could address that and tell me that I'm wrong. But
no, you are correct. My request to you is for your recommendation as to what you could recommend to this committee as to a level.
I have a great deal of problem, Senator, with the whole concept of holding these salaries, and if I'm permitted to address that, I'd like to do that very thing. If not, then I would say that the salaries, since everyone else's salary is being held as it was last year, the equitable thing would be to hold the directors and deputy commissioners the same way. However, the bill in its entirety is not equitable.
What were they last year?
I'm sorry?
What were they last year for those two?
The directors were left on the salary schedule. Directors are now making as high as over $56,000 a year. Left to the longevity coverage, which apparently they are, they would continue to receive their 3.75 longevity increments, which are not pay schedule step, so that we would next year probably have directors going on to something in excess of $57,000 under coverage of the longevity bill statute. So I do believe something has to be done, and perhaps as we've done with non-covered salaries, they could be frozen at their present salary to the as they exceed $50,000 and then another $50,000 adjustments will be made. We have in the non-covered pay bill worked out a proration or a graduation of increments under between below $50,000, and that could be applied here at the board.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, let me ask one more question. The directors and the deputy commissioners are not in this bill.
That's correct.
If we wanted to put them in this bill, what would your recommendation be?
If it's to be consistent with the rest of the bill, the salary should be the same as those set last year.
Okay. Do you have that language?
$42,372 apparently was the amount. I apologize because it is here indeed. For the deputy department head, deputy commissioner. $43,372 was his last year's salary, and if this is to be the level of pay, then that would be equitable to continue at that rate.
Do you have a pay scale there, Pat? What are you looking at when you see the 43,372?
The committee substitute to 182.
It's,
what page is theirs? On page 2.
Line 17.
Line 17.
All of them.
Page 3, I'm sorry. I think Mrs. Debo responded to the original.
Oh, okay. How about deputy commissioners? Are they in there?
That is a deputy commissioner.
That's a deputy. Yeah.
Director. Oh, director?
The director who was let down term.
Just the directors left out entirely?
Yes.
Okay, what is your language recommendation on that?
We have, in the non-covered pay bill, recommended that no increases be allowed above $50,000. If a person is making $50,000 or more, there would be no increase. I think that should be included in this bill. And then some proration of increase below $50,000 so that they aren't cut off abruptly, but there's a lesser increase. That language is in the non-covered pay bill and can be extracted from there.
Where is that?
That's a house bill.
Yes, $220.
Okay, while we're acquiring that, Senator Ray, you have a question?
I was just wondering why we're raising it these times.
Senator Clutter?
I'm sorry.
Senator Ray had a question.
I haven't raised anyone, Senator Ray, in my bills.
You haven't?
Mr. Hutt.
Senate Bill 182 has not raised the...
Committee substitute.
Mr. Chair?
I...
Senator Sumner?
To the back. Yes.
Senator Clutter?
What are you in favor of? Which one of these bills?
The committee substitute for Senate Bill 182 by the State Affairs Committee.
All right, so that...
I do not find objection to the inclusion of the directives, you know, in setting the level for them.
What do you find objectionable in the committee substitute?
Pardon?
Anything in committee substitute?
No, this is what everybody's being paid right now.
Are you in favor of addressing the the amendments that they're talking about in the House version in the committee substitute?
I have not looked at it, but if it addresses directors and freezes them at pay level, then I would be in accord with it.
What is that?
I just wanted to make sure that he was supporting committee substitute for Senate Bill 182 and that it did not, as written, raise anybody's salaries, and further that he has no objection in addressing the language that's in the House bill, which freezes the directors at $50,000.
Mr. Chairman, the language in the House bill is the classified and partially exempt employee is paid according to the basic salary schedule in A of this section, which is listed above, who have a salary equal to or exceeding $4,166 a month on the effective date of this act remain entitled to the salary in effect on that date. Employees subject to the salary limitation imposed by this subsection are not eligible for merit or longevity salary increases on or after the effective date of this act. In determining which employees are covered by the limitation imposed by this subsection, the salary which would be paid if the employees were subject to the basic salary governs. Is everybody okay?
Okay, Mr. Chairman. The only question I've got then is how do we answer when we talk about the amendment between directors? I don't know how to address it, but it's something we're going to be asked.
I'd like to ask Pat. I think there's been some misunderstanding about one person making more than the other is the reason for raising their salary. Let's take, for instance, the guy that's been a director for 20 years. He's not commissioner material. He's not in politics. He's been out there working for 20 years. And naturally, by longevity, he's got himself in his area of good pay. Another guy comes along and just by the book of the work of the governor, wants to be commissioner. He's the first day on the job. For some reason, they think without having given any service that he ought to make more than the guy 20. That is, there's something unfair about that. I fail to see that, I don't know if you're following what I'm saying, but I think that's kind of a red herring out here that some guy's been on 20 years is making more than a guy that just got on the job yesterday. It's bad. I think that's going to happen in public service.
Mr. Chairman,
can't just keep raising.
That is what I'm talking about. Just so their base pay is not different. I don't mind longevity or earning more as a matter of time, and I get up to some threshold and stop it. But
base pay.
Senator Bennett,
I was just going to say that the fact that the federal government is quite minor.
Senator Ray?
What is the cost of the salary commission?
Staff?
I mean, the actual cost.
$6,000.
reason, what is the reason we're abolishing scholarships?
The reason is they have not performed for the intention that they were created to make sound judgments on pay increases and divorce it from the political arena. And in both instances of their product, that has not been so. They made a determination and then responded to political pressure, placing the burden then upon the legislature for enactment. And the only recourse we have is the acceptance of all or none. Of course, you can make your objections known. They can reconvene, make the changes, but you can't address each category independently of the other. And you know, as long as the responsibility is ours, then we might as well take it fully.
React politically.
Because they will certainly react politically.
That's what we're doing.
But we're in a box two times. The first suggestions created empathy of enormous raises. The political arena said no way. So then come back with a lower one, and even if the lower one still doesn't fit within budgetary constraints that we have, we become the villains again. So since we have to make the judgment, maybe since we know more of the financial constraints that the state is in, that we negotiate those initially to begin with, that this is the best that we can do at this time.
As long as they don't respond politically, I don't want to do that.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator.
I'd like a clarification on the House language. If I understood what Gary read, all you'd be doing on that is placing a ceiling that a director could not earn more than $50,000, which I think also would be helpful in establishing a ceiling for him. He can't get above that. Is that correct?
That's correct. There are some who are above that now, Senator, but this would limit progression.
Right. And therefore, removing that obstacle that, you know, the subordinates are making considerably more than the superior and so forth.
You're going to have. I don't know how to change the thing, but it says paid according to the basic schedule in A. I don't have to do it.
Yes, we can reference to the section of the law or the section of the scholar. Okay.
Is there any objection to including that amendment in for directors, which is section 2, and the change would be that the classified and partially exempt employees paid according to the basic salary schedule, and then we'll reference the existing law, who have a salary equal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'll make a motion. Is there an objection? Without objection, we'll include that as a part of Senate Bill 182. Is there further discussion on other portions of the Senate bill? Motion?
I move an amendment to the Senate bill, pass out committee 72 for Senate Bill 182 with amendment. Individual recommendations.
Thank you very much. Without objection, we have before us Senate Bill 24, which is the last bill.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hackett.
If everyone has a copy of that bill, I'd call your attention to line 17 of the bill where it says that the person electing to have insurance under this paragraph shall pay one half the cost. That was amended in the Senate House Committee, Mr. Chairman, to require that they pay 90% of the cost. And we were to have a new fiscal note on that. However, that fiscal note has not arrived. Senator Ray may want to speak on that matter.
Senator Ray?
Well, what this would do is to provide those people who have no umbrella now to get under this and actually, I'm terribly disappointed that we don't have the original bill. At least this would provide some people, some old people, the opportunity to get glasses, hearing aids, and dentures. You know, even though it's an increased cost for them.
This is the one that you've been giving me. Oh, would you say it one more time, please? I missed it.
You know, have a good bill.
Okay, the, is it a committee substitute that came out of HESS?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Or was it an amendment?
An amendment came out of HESS. It agreed that 90%. 90% on line 17 and 90% on line 17.
So it's covered.
Stated 50% to 90%, Mr. Chairman. 90% to 50%.
Glenn, did you receive an approximate fiscal note from them?
Mr. Chairman,
we don't have one.
No, we did not. We asked for a new fiscal note on that. Apparently, it's not coming out of the check. It'd be less than.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be about $160,000.
Yeah.
Is that what they're looking for?
Yeah. Yeah. $200,000. Do you have an old fiscal note?
Yeah. What? You can throw it in the old one is $1,000,006.
1.6.
That was for 50%.
So we reduce it from this level.
Would you agree with the amendment, Senator Ray? So I don't get any problems on it.
I don't have any choice, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Do you support the amendment?
I support the amendment. Naturally, I'm terribly disappointed. The old people couldn't get a better shake up here.
I'll move out the bill if it do pass with the amendments from HESS. Is there an objection? Without objection. Is there extra copies?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
No.
15. I tried to get it.
We need it.
Okay, you want to bring up 1:30? Yeah. Without objection, we have before Senator 1:30.
Mr. Chairman, I would.
Senator.
Go ahead and move that we move Senator 1:30 to municipal elections.
There's a motion to put it out as individual recommendations without objection. Meeting is adjourned.